Hi, this is Jim Ketting.
And I'm Ed Kerr.
And we're excited to talk to you about practice. Ed, tell us what practice is.
Practice is a mobile practice facility for sales teams, a batting cage for sales teams.
And it is a game changer. It moves the revenue needle like nothing you've ever seen in sales. And Ed, why don't you tell me a little bit about this? You know, if I don't know anything about, you know, what practice does, or, you know, AI in the sales media, tell me, or, you know, for sales forces, tell me how this works.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jim. And I think the easiest way to describe what we've created with practice is a batting cage, essentially, for sales teams. We set out initially to automate role play for training purposes, put it on a phone, and really help people become a little bit more comfortable and in command of their conversational skills, particularly as it relates to sales. Because role play is the best way to prepare for conversation. But everybody has always dreaded it. Typically, it would be done in a training scenario, a training environment, or in front of colleagues, in front of the whole room, or with your manager. High PTSD factor there. And when it is typically conducted, it's sort of cringeworthy. You know, it always goes off the rails, feels weird. So, but there's nothing better than actually practicing what you have to say. Obviously, it's how many people have practiced in front of the mirror before, right?
Yeah.
So could we create a psychologically safe environment for people to practice what they're going to say? And that's really the simple thing that we set out to build. And along the way, we've learned quite a bit, and the initial version of what we'd built has evolved quite significantly. And now, especially because of AI, it's taken it to a whole new level. It has solved a lot of the challenges that we had all along before we had the wonderful sort of addition of AI.
This is really good. This is really interesting. I think, you know, that's really important, because a lot of times when a salesperson is getting in front of a sales manager or trying to practice that, there's all this cortisol that builds up in their brain, and they don't remember their lines, and they forget, and they kind of go back to this. And the same thing happens with a customer. And so until they get used to doing it, like practicing a musical instrument, it's really, really difficult.
You're exactly right. And you bring up a great point. When you think about a musician and how they let the muse take them, or a writer, or any artist, if you're worried about what your next step is, then you can't let the dance won't happen, right?
Yeah.
So I think when salespeople are worried about what to say, or then they don't know what to say. They're certainly taking their focus off of this person they're speaking with, and it's just kind of like an acting. If you're seeing someone on camera who goes up on a line, they don't know what their line is. You can see it register on their face. As much as they try to hide it, you'll see it. And I think it's the same thing in sales. And sales conversations are inherently contrived or unnatural,
mm-hmm.
often very uncomfortable, right? Because you have typically somebody who has an agenda, who is engaging with someone who knows that they're talking to someone who has an agenda.
So right.
There's an odd construct there where, yeah, I know you're there to persuade me, and I'm, you know, not comfortable with your tactics. I'm looking for false notes, right? And so there has to be a real authenticity while also pursuing an objective in that moment. So I don't want to get too in the weeds on all that, but it, suffice to say, it requires a lot of practice,
yeah.
to be able to be authentic, genuine, and effective in an intentional conversation.
Right.
And unfortunately, I think the big thing that we discovered is that sales teams don't practice. Or if they do, they certainly don't do it routinely or enough.
Yeah.
And sales managers, you know, chief revenue officers, sales coaches are all typically training departments, the L&D groups. they're all very frustrated that there's not enough reinforcement of the best practices and the techniques that all of them should know to do their job effectively.
Yeah. One of the sales training I went through, the guy told me, he says, listen, basically you're a shrink performing a Broadway play, and you've got to know what you're doing. If you don't understand the context and how you're doing it, he says, you're going to lose the opportunity before it even materializes. And so from me, when you started showing me this stuff, I got super excited about this because I've recruited and trained and hired probably 1,000 sales reps. Mm-hmm. And the biggest challenge in all of those areas that I've worked with is changing behavior. Changing behavior, getting those neural pathways to fire a little bit differently. It's really difficult to do that. And so I watched companies go out and hire these guru sales managers or sales directors, and they poach them from one team and they pay them $400,000 and they're going to change the whole organization. And what can one guy do? You know, he goes through and fires a bunch of managers, hires a bunch of new ones, promotes a bunch of the top producers. So now the top producers are not out in the field anymore. They're trying to manage, but they've got no management training. So if this was $400,000, I know it's a lot cheaper, but how would this be more effective if a company was looking to hire, you know, or bring this in versus hire a sales management guru out in the marketplace?
Well, I think you kind of hit on it when you said, how much can one guy or gal do, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have the right content or the right messaging, the right strategy and approach. But it doesn't work if it doesn't find its way to the customer, to the prospect. And what we found is that despite best efforts, most training doesn't stick. And it doesn't stick because it's not reinforced. And so we felt like it was really important that there be a sort of mobile practice facility or a batting cage that was filled with whatever content that sales coach or that company needed their people to learn and to be in command of in conversations with prospects. And so we feel like we've created a system that's really content agnostic, but it's there to help that content or that those sales tactics or strategies stick. And they're not going to stick unless people get reps. And that's why we think of it as a batting cage. You know, you're not going to retain something without repetition. And too often, what we've found is that even the best training organizations, they'll bring in a new hire in that initial week or 2 months or however long that training period is, they're getting a ton of information, and it's almost as though they're learning a new language.
Yeah.
And there's only so much that they can possibly retain, much less effectively articulate. There's a big difference between knowing something and being able to transfer that knowledge effectively into conversation.
Right.
And so I really feel like most training is incomplete. Because it can take somebody a year, we've been told, a year and a half before they really find their sea legs conversationally with whatever the content is. So we feel like we've created a kind of a language learning system. Instead of learning the language of German or French, you're learning the language of your role or your industry. And that just takes a while. And typically salespeople come out of training and then they're left to their own devices, whether they're on the phone or face to face with a prospect, and they revert to whatever comes to mind or whatever is most comfortable. Or maybe they try it and wing it, and they try different things from one situation to the next. And so we thought, could we create a way to help them through repetition internalize really the best approaches to certain conversational situations?
Yeah, that's really good. Now, a lot of companies will go out and they'll hire, you know, a lot of trainers out there. So they're either looking at, you know, the Challenger sale or, you know, Sandler selling or Spin selling, or, you know, one of my favorites is Mike Weinberg, you know, especially for sales management and things. So they've just hired them. Do you ever get any reluctance where it's like, oh my gosh, here's another tool? You know, we just went through spin. You were showing me something about it doesn't matter. You're agnostic and you can put the Sandler stuff or the spin stuff in and have the AI do all that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, we love it when we find an organization that's been willing to invest in a Mike Weinberg or a Sandler because it shows that they recognize the importance of getting their team on a consistent, effective message, of getting their team skilled in understanding the why of a sales conversation and how it should be conducted. And so to us, that represents a company that understands that it's as important as anything in terms of revenue production. But what all of those programs typically lack is a really efficient and effective practice mechanism. And we've heard it time and again from sales coaches and from training departments, L&D groups, that all those best efforts, all that great theory is typically lost if it's not reinforced continuously. And then the other challenge is it's really very unrealistic to expect that salespeople are going to be constantly practicing. They're not like a baseball team or a football team. Because they still have to go out there and do their job every single day, and they're busy and at the end of a fire hose typically. So what we try to do is help them distill the best tactics that move the needle in conversions across the sales process, and then practice those things, and only practice them maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes a day. But if that can become habitual, if you're constantly aware of the importance of warming up your voice, or if you're Steph Curry still shoots free throws every day, mm-hmm. the greatest shooter in the history of the game, still warms up. And I think salespeople need to do the same thing. And so, can we make that something that is realistically done on a regular basis, and also something that's really very helpful, so that we've distilled the best tactics? And they're there as a reminder, you know. So long answer to your question, I think with the sales coaches, I think if they're not aware of us, I think they'll like us because we'll provide that missing piece that they've not had.
Well, one of the things you were showing me is having the AI go in there and you're selecting Sandler or spin selling or challenger sale, and then the AI knows what the salesperson is supposed to be going through that process. So if a company is like, no, this works best for us, and we've already put the training in there, the AI already knows that. And spin selling might be different than challenger sale, might be different than Sandler, might be different than Mike Weinberg would have you do it, but it already knows, and it's going to listen to the sales rep and give that sales rep feedback and grade the sales rep on how well they're doing. I mean, how powerful would that be for a sales manager to look at that and say, wow, I actually know what he's doing. I know he's doing a good job, and I've got data behind this to see how well he is doing.
Yeah, well, when we first started working with AI, we actually created a content wizard that was able to create conversational situations within the style of some of the most popular sales training methodologies. And it was really remarkable at how well it could sort of differentiate between the challenger approach or the Sandler approach. And so I think if companies are a fan of or, they rely on one of those methodologies, there's ways for that content wizard to properly kind of align their content. But I think what's more exciting recently is just how we've been training various AI models to assume the role of a customer or assume the role of a coach who can provide feedback consistent with one of those methodologies. And it's quite good.
Yeah. It's the most impressive thing that I've ever seen. I mean, you didn't come up with this, on a cocktail napkin last night. You've been working on this for years, and there's millions of dollars invested in this. This is not this is very elaborate tool. I can't wait, this, I think this is just going to explode for you. Now, I want to talk a little bit about some of your successes, and so what you've seen. You've got some major insurance companies, you've got some home companies who are using this and just having incredible effects. But before I do that, I want to go a little bit back into how we got into this. You talk about memorizing a script and thinking through that. And if people would go and they would look at this little thing called IMDb, we see this guy here, Ed Kerr, who's been in lots and lots and lots and lots of acting roles. So tell me about this. How did you go from an actor to an AI guru on sales behavior changing?
Very random, right? Yeah, it was really kind of total mistake in a way. My best friend, he and I had always talked about making a movie together. And so we decided to finally do it. This was back in 2008. And we ended up building an application instead. That's a really long story. I don't want to get into that today. But we ended up building what was essentially an acting machine, a way for people to act together, phone to phone. It was our first foray into product development, a lot of lessons learned along that front, but it was a consumer product, a social media application. And we ended up being one of the favorite apps of Apple in the App Store. I was proud of how we ended up ultimately executing on it through various iterations. But basically, it was called Roller, it was just a way for you to perform in a scene opposite someone else. And we made deals with the studios so people could reenact scenes from some of those most popular movies ever made. In the app, you had the teleprompter with your lines in it from the scene, and you could read from those as you reacted to a recording of someone else who had done the other part in the scene already. Mm-hmm. So
I could do Third Chin of the Llama. He's a big hitter, yeah.
Caddyshack was one of the movies. Yeah. So the whole point was it was kind of karaoke for acting. Mm-hmm. The thought was, could we give everybody else this fun experience of just, not only reciting the lines, and there's so many of us in our generation certainly grew up doing that. I think it's less important today, less social currency today. I don't hear young kids quoting movie lines like, we did probably back in the day. But acting is fun, and acting is, to do it really well is very difficult, but I think lots of people can do it and enjoy it who don't intend to have a film or stage career. So we thought we'd see if we could tap into some of these large movie audiences and give them an interactive experience. And ultimately, we found that the content that came out of it was just not that compelling. So in order to have organic growth of any social media community, you need to be spinning out content continuously that can be shared at a high velocity. Otherwise, you have to buy all of your users. So that was sort of a non-starter ultimately. Yeah. But we'd built this really interesting mechanism that allowed for asynchronous.
Yeah, tell me the shift. How did it go from this to the sales practice training module?
Well, it was the original sort of interaction that we created. We patented, and we had numerous patents on it. Mm-hmm. I can just tell you a quick example of how it worked. So let's say, for example, you were the fan of the movie Anchorman.
Okay.
You'd open up your phone and you'd go to the Anchorman page, and there might be 9 or 10 clips from the movie. Some of the funniest, most memorable scenes from the movie that involve two people. And maybe you wanted to be Ron Burgundy, and one had Ron Burgundy in it with Veronica Corningstone, let's say. Mm-hmm. So you'd click B. Ron Burgundy, and you would see all the lines from that scene. But But before doing that, actually, you'd be able to watch the original clip with the original actors in. So you'd have, kind of a refresh of it. And then if you click Ron Burgundy, then you'd see your lines. And then you could choose anyone in the world who had already played the opposing part. So if it was Christina Applegate playing Veronica Cornerstone, you could choose someone who might have done it 10 minutes before out of Cleveland, Ohio, or someone who did it months prior in France. It didn't matter. But the minute you clicked on that person, their video would download into the phone and you would get a countdown and the script would start to scroll and it would activate your camera to start recording you visually and then engage your microphone to record your voice when it was your turn to speak and your speaker to project their voice when it was their turn to speak. And so I was literally reacting to their recording and it felt live. And so it was a really kind of a neat trick. And then immediately after the scene was done, it was cut together. It was intercut and you'd see this scene. So you'd see me reacting to your recording. You could do it as many times as you liked. And when you were happy with it, it would post to your profile and you could send it and the person would get a notification that Ed had just done a scene with you and Anchorman. And they could roll back with you. And then what was kind of neat is once you posted your recording, anyone in the world could then react to your half of that scene. So the concept was we're creating a single point of contact that was kind of timeless, that was contextualized by pop culture content, big movie scenes, TV scenes that everyone was aware of, and that everyone could interact with at any point in time. So the business model was to really kind of make content more conversational in the social media realm and to bring influencers and stars to come in and collaborate with their fans around some of these scenes. So anyway.
So the light bulb goes off and you're like, hey, this needs to be a sales practice tool. Or how did that happen?
Well, some of our investors and lots of different people we showed it to thought, wow, this would be great for role playing, for sales. And since I didn't have a big background in sales, other than I had actually a few sales roles.
Well stop. Okay, because you did have a big background in sales and you don't know it, but you're competing against other actors in roles, and that's a very competitive market. And so you have to sell yourself as an actor. You have to sell yourself to the producer, to the director, to be a right role. So you did that over and over again. And, you know, we're all in sales, whether we realize it or not.
There are definitely quite a lot of parallels with acting, between acting and sales, no question. And so I didn't probably realize just how much the two are related. But I didn't really know much about sales training or the world of sales organizations. But I do know about interpersonal, conversational interactivity, right? So there's, and it's funny because with acting, when you're given a script, if you're an actor, you have to make lots of choices about how you're going to portray that character and how you're going to engage actively in that scene. And most acting methodologies, like sales methodologies, will have you focus on the other person, on that person and what your objective is, what you want from that person. Every acting class you'd go to, the acting coach would say, what do you want in this scene? And in sales, it's very similar. You go into a conversation in sales, you want something. You want that next meeting. You want the introduction to the decision maker. You want any number of things at any point in a sales conversation. And so the training is really kind of the same. When you get a script, you ask yourself, what do I want? What's my relationship to this person? How do I get what I want? What tactics should I use to get what I want? What's at stake if I don't get what I want? So in sales, I think, if a person goes into a sales conversation and they don't know really what their objective is in that moment, then they're probably pretty lost and they're probably following the wrong approach. And if they don't know enough about the person they're communicating with, then they don't really know how to address them. So salespeople, I think, the particularly new salespeople, the worst mistake they make is just to, as they say, show up and throw up, and they just start talking about their solution before they really get as much information as they can about the needs of the prospect. So anyway, there's a lot of different parallels between acting and sales.
Hmm.
But we had numerous investors and different people who saw what we'd created and thought it would be a great mechanism to automate role play for training purposes. So that's what, so we went to a number of different companies and asked them, is this something that you would use? And the response was very enthusiastic. And so we decided to pivot, and we rebuilt the platform from the ground up, and still with that core patented teleprompter or conversation simulator that we designed as the centerpiece.
Mm.
And went out initially to one of the largest pest control companies in the world and started working with them. They were great partners and allowed us to really kind of experiment and iterate inside of that company. So it was, as product designers and builders, it was a real luxury to have a large company where we could test things out on a continuous basis.
Yeah, you demoed that to me, and it was amazing, you know, on how I was blown away, because the artificial intelligence in that was a customer who was not a good customer. I mean, it was like, look, get out of here. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And watching you go through the script and fight with the artificial intelligence and get that artificial intelligence to come out, you know, from that lawn care scenario, I was blown away. That's what really sold me on this thing.
Yeah, that's actually the later stage version. Mm-hmm. A few years later, when we actually have incorporated that, this is we call that customer AI scrimmaging, and we've been working on that for the last year, and that now has gotten to a really phenomenal state. So we train the AI to be a customer of any company. In that case, it was a lawn care company. And we train that AI to understand the situation and to be persuaded by certain approaches or not, and to provide lots of resistance. And we can dial up the resistance to be, you know, a fairly friendly customer, or a horrible customer. And it's kind of funny because
that's hilarious.
And then the learners, they've got to dive in, and they don't know where that conversation's going. But their job is to achieve their objective in that conversation, and they know certain tactics that they can use to do that. And then the AI is able to give them feedback on what they did well and coaching on what they could do differently next time.
Oh, really? Wow.
And so I think it's important to bring up this part, because along this process of trying to devise this solution to actually really help sales organizations get their people to be more effective quicker conversationally. One of the biggest problems was the managers. It always has been. And not that they're not great people, but they're, you know, if we work with a company, for example, that might have 400 managers nationwide, and there's a lot of turnover, and some of those managers come from an operations background, so they're not really trained in sales themselves.
Hmm.
They're all super busy, and they don't have time to watch a bunch of videos or, you know, do ride-alongs. They're probably buried in lots of reports. And so the sales training that should be ongoing, or that reinforcement that should be ongoing, just doesn't happen.
Yeah, there's no coaching. There's, you know, they're, I call them CRM jockeys, you know.
Yeah.
They just look at the CRM and then regurgitate what they're seeing on the CRM to the sales rep. I'm looking at Salesforce and it shows here, I need an answer. And the sales rep's like, oh my gosh, you know.
Well, and the other thing too, as these CRM jockeys, they're focusing on the lagging indicators as opposed to the leading indicators.
Yeah.
So they're not affecting change and change of behavior or skill sets.
Yeah.
And so when we would deploy practice into large numbers of people across the country, we'd find that so many of the managers just were not engaged. They weren't providing feedback. They weren't promoting it to their teams. And that's where it would all break down, because if people aren't held accountable and if there's not, a real emphasis on feedback, then it's the initiative typically fails.
Yeah.
So we tried all sorts of different things to mitigate that and to make the manager less, make it less dependent on the manager's time. But it wasn't until AI came along that we were able to really kind of fully automate the process. And the manager now has great visibility and can hold his people accountable, but doesn't have to be involved constantly. And the coaching is fantastic. The feedback's great.
So what kind of reports does the manager get back? You know, if I know that the only way that my revenue needle is going to move is for my salespeople to get more sales and to have better encounters and get out with more people, half the battle is building confidence in them, that I don't have the turnover problems. What kind of data or reports am I getting back as a sales manager to see if, you know, who on the team is practicing, who on the team is blowing this off?
Yeah, so we report really on all the activity associated with the app. So we know whether they're practicing, and when they do scrimmage with the AI, we know the quality of their practice and the time, how much time they're practicing, and then we also know the quality of their scrimmages. And so, and you really kind of have to have, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
So we ultimately, once we train the AI models, we then take those winning arguments, those talk tracks that are really kind of essential, and we put those into practice, and that's the batting cage, and our people practice those conversations, and then they need to use those same tactics when they're scrimmaging with the AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so the manager gets a report on their practice habits and their scrimmaging habits and their performance in those scrimmages. And so it's been really great to see, like, very typically when we go into a new company, we'll put them up against the hard, difficult customer and we'll get a baseline. We'll also ask them sometimes, we'll ask the entire company their most difficult, challenging objection. And we've been doing that for years in what we have, like, a pop quiz kind of function inside of practice. Yeah. And it's shocking because typically 50 to 70% of the people we ask that most common objection that they might get 3 or 4 or 5 times a day don't know how to respond.
Is that shocking for, you know, upper management, sales manager, the revenue officer? Are they just dumbfounded that they, when you give them data, it's like, yeah, we've got 100 salespeople and 86% of them can't answer the basic objection that they get every day?
I don't think it's shocking to them. Mm-hmm. It was shocking to me.
Hmm.
Because how is that acceptable? It's if there are 5, 6, 7, maybe 5 objections typically that most people need to know, and you're a salesperson and you don't know the approach or the proper response or question to ask in response to that objection, then you shouldn't be out there in front of that customer. And if that's happening multiple times a day,
yeah.
How many leads are burned? How many missed opportunities from sales that are lost? How much money does that amount to?
Yeah.
And, so it's pretty interesting. When I ask a manager that question of, if I asked your entire team, what percentage would respond in the way that you want them to? They almost always respond, I don't know, maybe 20, 30%. And I think that they've just kind of given up hope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's such a hard thing to hurt all those cats.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to rain on the managers because I think they're doing the best that they can with the tools they have. But I think there's always been this need for a system that could be efficient, that could kind of get everyone aligned around the right way to conduct conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. A lot of times, managers are trying to move the needle and they're frustrated. They just get a sales rep working, he's doing well, and then, you know, he takes another job someplace else and now he's starting with a new guy and, you know, going through that turnover all the time. And I see that as a huge problem in this industry. Any type of sales organization is always dealing with turnover. How does this help with the turnover that sales organizations have?
Well, we've had through some of our case studies shown that we can actually dramatically impact retention, particularly in companies that do a lot of hiring and for which churn is a challenge. We like service companies because they typically are hiring all the time.
A service company. Give me an example of a service company.
Whether it's lawn care, pest control, HVAC, security, any company that has a field sales team and a national presence, those are the types of companies that I think can really, really benefit from practice.
Okay. Because like insurance.
Insurance as well, medical device, pharma, manufacturing. So I think there's any team that has a large number of dispersed field sales personnel that are either selling face to face or door to or over the phone, and they've got to get those people hired and ramped up, ideally as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
and it just can take a long time. And when a new hire doesn't adapt quickly enough, and they're thrust out into the field or on the phone with a customer, and they don't have that confidence or that capability, they pretty quickly develop sales reluctance.
Yeah,
and they'll quit.
Hell yeah.
And not only because they're not making sales and therefore not making money, but because they're just getting discouraged.
Yeah.
And what we've always thought is if every one of these companies has the organizational intelligence to help these people on a regular daily basis, to give them a little lifeline, why isn't that captured? Why isn't it codified? And why isn't it accessible to that rep out in the field, like a lifeline? I remember what was that show, How to Become a Millionaire? What was that show? Remember
Slumdog Millionaire?
No.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Yeah. And you remember they could call a lifeline, right? Who wants to be a millionaire? I think of the practice app as a lifeline that is great for parking lot prep. You can quickly go in. And you know that you're going to encounter this conversational situation. Well, then go in and get a couple of swings at the plate first.
Yeah.
And it's not about memorizing verbatim what to say, but it's about an approach. Knowing the why of that moment and having some facility with the words and some comfort with it, so that you're not sitting there thinking about what to say. Rather, you're intently listening and focused on the prospect.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that a lot of salespeople, if you want to have a really good salespeople or salesperson that just really puts up the numbers, it has to do a lot with their confidence. And when their confidence is down, it doesn't matter how good of a prospect you put them into, it doesn't seem to transact into a sale. And so if you take a sales rep and you get their confidence up through something like this or how coaching or whatever, it seems like their numbers go up. They don't have the stress, the cortisol buildup, all this other stuff, their confidence, they've got, the dopamine flowing and they've got the oxytocin. Serotonin, endorphins, all these things are flowing in their brain, kind of that angel's cocktail, as David J.P. Phillips would call it in his book, High on Life. Those things are dangerous, for moving that revenue needle, to have the salespeople have confidence. And I think this is one of the best tools I've ever seen as far as helping them get that confidence.
When we were talking earlier about the often unnatural or maybe subtly contentious relationship between a prospect and a seller.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're being sold to, and you really know you're being sold to when someone does it poorly.
Yeah.
And I think that seasoned sales professional who really comes across as someone who's genuinely curious about you and your business and the challenges you face, and they get you to open up because you're just having a conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually they lead you to a realization, this epiphany that you've had. And you thought, gosh, you know, that guy Jim was really so smart and insightful. Great guy. I really liked him. And that solution he was talking about, I mean, I just makes so much sense, you know, and you're not being sold to, you're having a really great conversation, a conversation that, you know, ultimately leads to the realization that this is a problem that you have that's costing you a lot of money, and
yeah,
there's a certain urgency, you better solve it. And you just, that salesperson took you through that whole process, and really you just thought that they were just genuinely curious. Now that's a good salesperson.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And cut to the other person who's brand new and who's just jumps right in, and they're really unclear about how to, you know, connect with this human being across from them. And unsure of, you know, what information they need. So they just start talking about their product. And
yeah. And then they go to the platitudes, you know, that if I could, would you, you know, the used car.
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah. No, you can't.
If I could, would you buy today?
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's been one of the biggest misconceptions about practice,
yeah,
and about what we've created is, the last thing we ever want is to create someone who's a robot, who's memorized a few lines of something and decides they're just going to try them on someone. We're trying to develop a system that allows them to be absolutely comfortable conversationally, with a real facility for the approach to those mm-hmm. moments.
Yeah.
And if they get the reps in, it doesn't matter what words they say, they're going to go off script, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's the gist that we want to get them to. And we don't really care what they say, as long as they're following the right approach. So, the AI will know, whether you've asked the right questions or not, regardless of which words you actually used.
Yeah.
So that's a key thing. I think a lot of times people think that we're trying to train people on some of those horrible old kind of sales tactics, and it's really not that.
Well, and I think it's really incredible, you know, the tonality and how the artificial intelligence can pick up on that. You know, the old thing that I used to train sales people with was I would give them the old, I guess it was Zig Ziglar who came up with this, but it was, I didn't say she stole the money. And I said, that means one thing, right? Oh yeah, it means one thing. And I'd say, I didn't say she stole the money. I didn't say she stole the money. Uh-huh. I didn't say she stole the money. I didn't say she stole the money. And just by changing emphasis, I've changed the whole meaning of that. And I think the AI is sophisticated enough to where it's looking at tonality and grading you on how your delivery is, because you could be very baroque in your delivery and, you know, you're not making that connection with the customer. There's no empathy. And they're finding that AI is having more empathy. You know, studies are showing it has more empathy than we do as human beings.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And really, that capability has only become something that we've been able to see manifest itself in these exchanges in the last probably 3 months. And we were able to incorporate some of that to support and recognize soft skills and emotionality. It's still early stage. It's getting better and
yeah.
better, but it definitely knows whether you're coming off truthfully.
Yeah.
And whether you're empathetic. And tonally it can certainly distinguish between the words you're emphasizing or not.
Yeah.
So It's been funny. There's times when I've joked with it, and it's been offended because it says like, I don't have time for you to come and just joke with me, you know? And I'm like, where did that come? So, and I think the other thing that's kind of interesting about working on this is as we've seen how quickly the AI is evolving, and depending on who you ask, we'll be at artificial general intelligence fairly soon. Is it 2 years? Is it 5 years? And when we're there, it should be really indistinguishable from a human being. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I'm going back to your website here, and I've got this step process, you know, your steps here. Can you kind of walk me through this and tell me a little bit about this, how this works?
Yeah, so we like to be laser focused on the types of conversations that move the needle.
Okay.
In a sale. And regardless of whether it's a short sales cycle that's really transactional that might happen at a doorway, or a long sales cycle that might take a year or more, there are moments along the path of that sale that you are unavoidable, right? So if it's a long sales cycle or a short one, at some point, I'm introducing myself to a stranger.
Yeah.
And I need to help them understand who I am and why I'm there. And I need to really kind of explore really quickly whether there's a need for further conversation, and I need to get a meeting set. Or if I'm at the door and I'm hoping to sell them that very moment, I need to move them to the next stage in that sale, which is probably, are you interested in hearing more? So let's say, for example, step one here would be, if it's a challenging sales situation, let's just start with the cold call or the prospecting call or the first conversation at the door. That's a very intimidating moment. And particularly for a new salesperson, and they better have a plan going into that conversation.
Yeah.
And they'd better be able to anticipate and pivot based off of the typical responses they're going to get. So yeah, those would be most likely, you know, objections. So what we do is we go in and say, all right, well, how do you train your people on how to conduct a prospecting call?
Okay.
And they've probably got a training manual, and they probably have, if they're a large enough corporation, they have a training department or L&D group, and they've been doing it a certain way for a long time. Now, that playbook, if you will, might have been written by a Mike Weinberg, might have been a great sales story that he came up with, and or could have come from inspired by Sandler or Challenger, but in some cases, it was really probably written by Lou Ann or Steve in the training department, who may or may not have been a salesperson. I don't know.
Yeah.
We've encountered some pretty crazy things in these training manuals that are just so outdated. But anyway, there's a process they teach on that. And people learn it through typically in a class setting. In theory, they get this training. They might do a little role playing, and then they're out there doing it, right? And so we'll first say, okay, well, how good is that approach?
Yeah.
And is everyone using it, or how does the best person in the organization do it? And if we can capture that, can we then give everybody else access to that? Give everyone else an opportunity to practice how the best people do it. So we're first really trying to identify the current state of their team and their approaches, and then trying to improve it and improve the thinking around it.
Yeah, so you got to customize this for it. It's not a one size fits all. I mean, there's a lot of programming involved and coaching the AI and getting the AI up to speed. So it's not just like you can buy this and say, all right, you know, flip it on. You've got to get people to use it and how to, you know, train that AI to be effective.
We can train the AI in a matter of a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Really, it takes, we like to take our time with it, though. We typically will take a couple of weeks.
To train the AI, you've got to get the data from the sales organization. You know, I think you were talking about one of the lawn care companies that you were saying that the key moment is to get somebody out of the front door and onto the lawn. That was, they found if that happened, then their sales went up exponentially. And so you train the AI to say, okay, well, this is what we're going to teach all of the salespeople to get. And I watched you do a role play with this, and I was just blown away because I've got dinner on, I can't come out, you know, all the other stuff that, you know, the AI is coming back with you, and how you would go through and compete with that AI to get this person out on the lawn to look at the, you know, the Kentucky, it's a half cents a million, half Kentucky bluegrass, you know.
Well, with any kind of door-to-door selling, it's about really just earning that mm-hmm. trust initially and piquing their interest and keeping the conversation going. Mm-hmm. And in lawn care, it's about you know, getting that customer out on the lawn to talk about what they don't like about their grass, right? And then potentially that opens up an opportunity for, well, what if you consider our solution? So
chinch bugs, not a lot of people about cows.
But if you had if you talk to 20 people a day and you get 3 or 4 people mm-hmm. out on the lawn, but if you could get 6 instead, yeah. then mm-hmm. obviously you're putting more people into the funnel.
Yeah.
And it's just math, right? So that's the first conversion opportunity. So could we help their people get a lot better at that conversation?
Yeah.
And to be able to respond when anticipating the most likely objections, right? And that's just a judo match, you know? And so they're at the door and they're trying to, you know, really not give up but be gracious and polite, but you know, get that person to open up in that moment. And that's if a new hire can be confident in that moment, it really, I think, helps a lot. Because if that person gets shut down over and over again, that's the person that's going to quit and is never going to get to where they need to go, because they just don't have the skill set. So we train them on the right tactics. We put those tactics into practice, and they get to practice them over and over again in a private environment on their own, and you know, anywhere they are, anytime. And then ultimately, they've got to use those techniques when they go up and scrimmage live with the AI. And we'll sometimes give them 3 different versions of that AI, a sort of friendly or easy customer that they've got to master, and then a more difficult one, and then one that's really difficult.
Okay. So it gets it more, it's kind of like the gamification, you know, you're going through and level 1, level 2, level 3, and you build your confidence as a salesperson, I guess, you get those higher levels.
Yeah, and I think at some point we will incorporate a whole layer of gamification into mm-hmm. the app. I think it can be very additive. I also think that those systems can be really contrived and and silly. But what's really cool in terms of gamification, in terms of the AI scrimmaging, is that it's inherently gamified.
Yeah.
Because I do it all the time. Like I demo our AI customer for practice. So we've created a customer that's a cold call customer. We call someone and they pick up the phone and I'm trying to get them to set a meeting to have a discovery conversation about practice.
Yeah.
And that customer just wants to hang up the phone.
Yep.
And so I interface with a lot because I'll demo that on sales calls. And every time I do it, I don't know what that customer's going to say.
Yeah.
That AI customer. And I don't know how well I'm going to be. I've gotten pretty good at it, but each time, you know, I have to convince her to take a meeting. And sometimes she's really not inclined to. So it's, I don't know the outcome. I really don't.
Yeah.
And so it really keeps you on your toes. And I think it's kind of fun. And, you know, if there's one thing that we've learned is if you don't make training, you know, kind of challenging or fun, And it's certainly, if you don't make it really relevant to their success, they're never going to do it.
Yeah.
And they're going to fight all the way. This is kind of a fun way to put people on the spot and see if they know, you know, how to perform their role.
Well, next time we do this, one of the things I want to do is I want to do a live demo. I want to have you back. I want you to, you know, we want to do this again and have a live demo, you know.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think we need to just, you know, start bringing in, you know, guys like Mike Weinberg and other sales professionals and sales management and sales gurus and sales coaches, and maybe ask them, you know, how to do it, and perhaps have them, you know, go up against the AI.
Yeah, well, that'd be fun. That'd be a lot of fun. I hadn't thought about that. Putting someone like Mike on a, well, what we can do with Mike is we could put him through the paces of a into the practice batting cage.
Okay.
And let him learn some of the ways that we describe practice and some of the questions that we ask of a practice prospect. And once he becomes familiar enough with those, he could use his own methodology and go up against the AI, and it'd be fun to see what happens. You know?
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, create an AI out of their image and their voice and everything else, and then have that be the one that gives the encouragement back to the sales force, you know, somebody that they like or relate to. You know, who's your favorite sales guy? Well, I like this guy. Well, great. We've got an AI image of him. He's going to talk to you.
Yeah, I think as far as they call them digital twins, mm-hmm. and a full AI avatar that is photorealistic and emotive and responsive, we're not there yet, and we will be there, and it wouldn't be cost effective, mm-hmm. but it's going to be pretty amazing at some point when there is that real, yeah. when you could duplicate a Mike Weinberg and put him in there. Now, we can do that with his voice right now, and we can do that with his sensibility and the exact type of feedback he would provide based on his sales system.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. But he's not going to be a live guy on camera that's an avatar yet. That's coming. Not to get off topic, but that's where it's going to be a really interesting challenge for the world when there's deep fake videos everywhere of people that you cannot tell a difference mm-hmm. between whether it's me sitting here talking or my AI avatar.
Yeah, well, this is all deep fake. This is all Zumbra.
None of it's real.
Is that all AI? Well, it's been good, and it's a very enlightening as far as what you've been talking about. And I'm kind of excited about how this is going to change the whole environment. One of the things I asked earlier, I said we'd get to, I want you to talk about some of the successes companies have had with this, and start with kind of like the first success. So the first company that you went through that they're having this aha moment, they're giving you feedback. It's like, oh, this is great. We want to take it to the next level, because I'm sure they probably start with a pilot and then they take it to the next level. And then kind of give me an overall on, you know, what's happening with these companies. They're seeing benefits. I mean, you're doing a lot of business. You know, you're kind of in demand.
Uh-huh.
So talk to me about company successes. You don't have to be specific on a company, but
yeah, like I mentioned before, we like to really focus on individual sales initiatives. Or moments in the course of a sale that either converts or doesn't. Whether that's a cold call converting to a meeting, or an upsell that either happens or doesn't. Or sometimes it's the closing conversation. How effective are people in the closing conversation? I think one of the first case studies we had was with a call center, which we don't really work with a lot of call centers anymore. We like to, and we can, but I think we've really focused more the last couple of years on field sales. But this was a call center. And we found that with this company, when they got their customers to commit to a payment plan, they called it auto pay or easy pay, where they were give a credit card and their card would just be deducted every month or every other month, then those types of customers would be retained longer. I think an additional 4 months of lifetime value. And so they would, at the end of every call, try to convert someone into being an easy pay or auto pay customer. And it was kind of a complicated conversation because if you were a new hire in particular, it was hard to explain how it worked because in this case, the service wasn't monthly. It was every other month, but they got billed every month.
Yeah.
And so the people who tried to sell it had a real difficult time explaining it. And what they needed was a really clear, concise way to explain to the customer how this billing process worked. And then they needed to practice it.
Yeah.
So we took these new hires and put them in to practice for a month, training on really the proper way to explain this payment process and the proper way to ask for someone to enroll in it.
Yeah.
And the close rates went from an average in this group of 19% to 64% after a month.
Wow.
And it translated after 7 months into over $13 million worth of business.
Wow.
So
you got half of that?
I wish we had. But I think the point of it really was to show when you focus on one critical conversation, and it wasn't there, it was not a lot for them to practice, but those who practiced it, they knew exactly what to say when it came to that payment program.
Wow.
And so that's what we kind of look for. One of the other things with one of the companies we work with, they hire people and train them in 5 days.
Yeah.
And then they're out in the field knocking on doors. And their average retention for a new hire is 5 weeks. And so they said, if you can just move our retention to 6 weeks, it'll make a huge difference. And so that was kind of the goal initially. Can we actually increase retention by a week? And can we actually make those new hires more successful sooner? So can we improve their conversion rates when they're out there knocking on doors? And in that first year, we increased retention by 2.5 weeks. So instead of 5 weeks, they were selling for 7.5 weeks. So we literally doubled the time that they could monetize that new hire. And that led to over 30% increase in revenue.
Wow.
I think, I kind of think of it as the sort of the new hire monetization window. So if you're a company that deals with a lot of churn and you need to get people, functional, capable, sooner than later, either A, so that they'll make more money for you, or
right.
B, so that they'll at least make a little money before they churn out. And that's kind of a, skeptical way of looking at it, but there really is, in a lot of these companies, a huge sensitivity to ramping people up, a speed to proficiency, to negate churn. So
that's really good. That's really good. So last question, thinking about this is what do you think the, if somebody wanted to look at this and they had a sales force, what's kind of a sweet spot for you as far as how many sales reps? I mean, because you could do 1,000 as well as you could, do, 100, but is there companies that, if they have 3 salespeople, it's probably not a good fit because of the cost, or is there, tell me kind of your sweet spot as far as companies that would be best with this.
Yeah, I think that our product will be really well suited for even the individual salesperson at some point.
Yeah.
Not now. So we won't likely engage with a sales team unless they have at least 50 salespeople.
Okay.
And very often it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
We kind of focus on the 500 to 1,000 range. But 100 or 100 plus is still, that's a pretty good sized team.
Yeah.
We can make a heck of a impact, with a team like that. And the onboarding, the starting is actually really very simple. Mm-hmm. We can be up and running in a couple of weeks. So like if I approached you and found that you had a team of, let's say, 50 or 100 or 500 mm-hmm. people, I guarantee you there would probably be one conversation or one moment in the sales process that could be conducted more effectively.
Yeah.
And I bet you we could diagnose. And if you weren't sure which one it was, we could figure it out pretty quickly using practice. And then we just optimize around that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you're going in and saying, okay, let's look at one moment in the sales cycle. Let's focus on that. Let's nail that and not going in and said, okay, we're going to change everything. We were using spin. Now we're going to use the challenger sale. And, you know, for a lot of salespeople, that's just, you know, too far of a, you know, the gap is just too huge for them to, to do.
And by the way, we're very content or tactic agnostic. It doesn't matter to us. You know, one company we literally, when we first started, we went out and interviewed the top five salespeople in the company mm-hmm. at selling this one product of theirs. And they all had a little bit different process, a little bit of different approach.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the same words, but we recorded them all and we put them all into practice. And people would go in and choose, I want to use the Jim Ketty method or the Ed Kerr method.
Yeah.
And they could, whatever resonated with them. So whether it's, you know, a Sandler approach or a Challenger approach or a Mike Weinberg approach, it doesn't really matter to us. And there could be a combination of them.
Yeah.
So I think the key thing is when we go in, we just want to know first, what's the current state?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and sometimes we'll go in and literally say, all right, let's just focus on their top five objections.
Okay.
And how does the entire team, how skilled are they at overcoming those objections?
Hmm.
And how can we actually, you know, give them the better tools to do that, like literally within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we'll measure the impact that it has. So, I like to focus on a particular sales initiative that if we're successful with it with one group, then it's easily, scaled up to across the entire organization. And that's where we have the best success.